Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine. This is Get the Funk Out. I hope your week is going well so far. So I had a chance to screen a really incredible documentary. It is out now. It's called Blind Logic. It's an award-winning documentary based on the book One Man's Vision, The Life of Automotive Pioneer Ralph R. Teeter. And it brought back a lot of memories of my dad teaching me to drive at a really young age. And the whole history of the automotive industry is really unfolded in this wonderful documentary. And standing by to talk about it is filmmaker Jack Teeter, great nephew of the late Ralph Teeter, who's featured in this film, Blind Logic. He's standing by right now. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning, Jane. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for calling in.
I'm very happy to be here. Thank you very much.
Well, when I saw the trailer for this film and I heard the backstory of your great uncle?
Yes, my great uncle.
And I had never heard of him, of Ralph Teeter, but the film really unpacks this whole history. How did you decide to produce this?
Well, I really goes back to 1995 when my aunt published the book One Man's Vision, and it was about her father. Marjorie Teeter Meyer wrote the book, and I always knew that it would be a great film, and it's such an inspiring story about this man from childhood blindness and what he achieved through life. I always knew that it would be a great story. But I wasn't really prepared to make a movie at that time. I had my career.
Okay.
And it wasn't until later in life that I really was able to put this together.
The footage is wonderful. Was it hard to pull together all of these, you know, pictures and images?
Well, it was very hard because when I decided to roll cameras in little small town Hagerstown in Indiana, I didn't really have any archives. I didn't know what I had available. I just decided to roll cameras. I had a partial script, but I wanted to get started in the fall and shoot some location footage in Hagerstown and put my Indiana cousins on camera. And then I spent a week with my cousin Ralph Meyer, who had the archives from his mother, who had passed away, Marjorie Teeter Meyer,
okay,
of Ralph Teeter. So I spent a week with him going through every image and some home movies, and I realized that I had enough to get started. But when I started storyboarding, I didn't really have enough to fill out the entire script.
Okay.
And so I had to license some footage and get some other images, and then get some more images from family sources, etc. Then it took 2.5 years to actually put it together.
I feel like it's a very important story to be told. And the way you told it is just wonderful. And for those who have never heard of your great uncle, Ralph Teeter, could you describe him? Because I haven't given away too many details.
Well, sure. He's known in some of the automotive circles for his invention of the cruise control. And that's what people kind of know him for in the automotive circles. He spent a lot of time in Detroit, but he also did quite a few other things. So, you know, at age 5, when he had his accident, he was already passionate about tools and working with tools and working with his father and uncles at the factory.
Yes.
And so he had this passion of mechanics, and he wanted to be an engineer, mechanical engineer. And just to give you a little background of how he was raised, his parents raised him to believe that he wasn't handicapped. Wanted him to raise him as a normal person,
mm-hmm,
which was a little unusual at the time. And so he developed his other senses, a very keen, sharp memory. His sense of touch and feeling of vibrations became very important to him, and he actually could see through the feeling of his of objects in his hands. And he felt he could see because he developed a strong sense of his mental vision.
Yes.
So I think the first 5 years of his life that he could see, he used that to his advantage to develop his mental vision. And then when he was age 12, he built a motor car with my grandfather, and the two of them machined each part by hand and put an actual motor car together. And this was before the town had cars. It was horse and buggies.
Sure. I want to interject something. It's so fascinating and just so wonderful how nobody held him back. They just embraced him. They continued, I mean, because he lost sight in one eye, and I know then he went blind in the other eye. But he just was embraced and brought into the same situation as if he could still see. And I loved how his hearing and his sense of touch, he just was brilliant.
Well, he was, and I certainly got to spend time with him in my childhood, and he gave my brother Dan and I a tour of his basement workshop, and he forgot to turn on the lights. He frequently did, and when the lights went on, we saw all this machinery, and dangerous machinery.
Sure.
And he would just be able to walk through his workshop and operate the machines like any sighted person could. And it was truly amazing to see. And when the family business grew to manufacture piston rings, Perfect Circle was the name of the company, and that's what they were known for, he could walk through his factories as if he was sighted, and it kind of shot quite a few of the employees, and some felt that he could really see.
Yeah, that makes sense. So tell me a little bit more about your relationship with him. Were you constantly with him? Tell me more about that.
No, we weren't, because I grew up in Detroit, and he was in Hagerstown, Indiana, which is about an hour east of Indianapolis. But we would go down there to visit, because my grandparents were there too. So we would be down there off and on during the year for vacations and family getaways. And we would always see Uncle Ralph, and it was kind of a joy to go visit Uncle Ralph, because he was a very kind-hearted human being, very humorous, and It was kind of astonishing for us boys to see how he could manage, knowing that he was blind, but it was almost as if he wasn't. He never had a cane. He never walked around with a cane. He sort of memorized every inch of his house, and to the point where he gave us a tour of the two Cadillacs that he had in his garage. And he would show us every dial and every gauge and what they did. And of course, at that time, he had the cruise control on.
That's right.
And he also had a lake home up in Lake Wawasee along with my grandfather, and they were both into speedboats. So we would see him in the summers up there too, and he would just gallivant around like any sighted person on the beach and on the dock, and get in boats, and you know, he might grab someone's arm on the dock just so he wouldn't fall in.
Sure.
But otherwise, it was pretty extraordinary to see how he navigated around.
When you were watching this footage, were there certain moments that brought back a lot of memories? Tell me more about that.
Well, I got choked up quite a while,
sure,
during 2.5 years of putting this together, because I realized I spent time with this man and wonderful fond memories. And as I'm looking through the images, and the home movies were the most emotional for me, because I had never seen these home movies.
Oh, really?
My grandfather had home movies, but I never saw Ralph's home movies. And to this day, none of us know who was behind the camera. It may have been his wife, Nellie.
Maybe.
But we don't really know. But so when I was going through this footage, it was very emotional for me. It was almost like he was still with us.
Mm.
But he inspired me so much throughout my life that when I was making this film, every day I would wake up with a new challenge of how am I going to do this, and who am I going to get to narrate, mm-hmm, and voice Uncle Ralph. And I was inspired by Uncle Ralph throughout, because he faced so many challenges in life.
Sure.
I figured if all the challenges that I'm facing are kind of minuscule.
Yes.
If he could graduate college with an engineering degree and invent these things, then what little challenges I have, it kind of put things in perspective
it
for
sure
me.
It sure does. It sure does.
And that's what I would like this film to do. I'm hoping that it'll inspire people and realize maybe what's important in life, and maybe they'll realize that some of their challenges may not be so big,
mm-hmm,
because we kind of look at our challenges and then they become bigger,
yes,
until we realize that maybe they're not as big as we think they are.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
that's true.
And I'm hoping that this film will do that in some respect.
Yeah.
I think.
I could definitely see that, because his story is so inspiring, especially those who face disabilities or adversity. And it's a wonderful film. So tell me how it's been received so far.
Well, we just came out with the film to the public yesterday.
Congratulations.
So it's a little too soon to see what the response will be.
Okay.
But having said that, we have screened the film across the country in various locations last year, starting in April, because I finished the film of March of 2024,
mm-hmm,
and we immediately had screenings in Indiana, and in the first screening being in Hagerstown, where the story takes place, and we had 350 people show up. And we had another screening in Richmond, where Ralph Teeter had a factory, and at several universities. And the response was overwhelmingly positive. So it was very gratifying to hear the response of people coming out of the theater and walking up to us and telling us what it meant to them and how much hope that it gave them.
It's beautiful.
And that they just couldn't believe that someone who went through so much could actually accomplish what he did.
Mm.
And do it in such a modest way. He didn't like attention drawn to him. He's very modest. And the accolades that he received later on in life, it was just, he was happy for it, but he didn't like to have a lot of attention drawn to him. And a lot of the accolades came after his passing in 1982. Where he was inducted into the Automotive Hall of Fame and the Inventors, National Inventors Hall of Fame. And that was just last year, as a matter of fact.
He had so many different things he was involved in, even in the war. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, both World Wars. World War One was he had just returned from college and working in the family business, And then the war broke out, and he wanted to serve his country like many of the other boys in town. And but having been blind, that was going to be another challenge. But he insisted, and he kind of talked his way into an engineering well, I don't know what I would call it, maybe an intern, but he was accepted into the New York Shipbuilding Company in Camden, New Jersey. Well, these guys didn't know what to do with him because he was blind.
Sure.
And so they gave him a desk, but really nothing to do. And they just kind of figured, well, we got to babysit this blind guy from a small town in Indiana.
Oh, come on.
And but he overheard them talking about a real serious problem they had with these torpedo boat destroyers, and the turbine engines were breaking apart at high speeds. And he kept hearing about this problem, and no one could solve it. And he approached them and said, I think I have a way to maybe fix the problem. And, of course, they were dismissing him. But he insisted. He said, what do you have to lose? Let me try. And and he balanced the turbine rotors. And that was the big problem. They couldn't balance these rotors. And he had experience with drive shafts in race cars at the Indy 500, and he could balance the drive shafts and the crankshafts because he could feel the vibrations with his hands. And so, okay, they let him try. And he was able to do it by, he told them, by spinning the rotors in the opposite directions, he can feel the vibration where he can get them to match precisely at the same time. And,
fantastic.
Well, he solved their problem, but by that time the war was winding down. But all those destroyers, torpedo boat destroyers, were used in World War II. Anyway, he solved their problem, and it made news throughout. It was kind of interesting because, you know, I think one of the headlines that was in the documentary is Blind Man Saves the War or something like that.
Yes, something like that, yeah.
And then when World War II came around, at that time, he was vice president of engineering, and they converted all the factories to wartime production. So all their piston rings and their testing facilities, and they hired a couple thousand more employees. So they, I think they had 6,500 employees, and they were working around the clock for the war effort. And like all the factories in Detroit and the automobile business, they all converted to the wartime production.
Okay.
So he was heavily involved with that, and he was on the board of the War Engineering Command, and the company was recognized for their excellence in production because they would make piston rings for the aircraft and tanks. Every engine that was going to the military, they would have to design a new piston ring and manufacture. So that's why the factory was pretty much working around the clock. And during the war, he refused to take any vacations and go up to his lake house because the war was going on, and he felt, well, if all of our boys are over there fighting, that he was going to continue to work and support whatever he could do. And I thought that was pretty extraordinary of him.
Absolutely. The film, I could see being seen by a variety of audiences. Was that your vision?
Well, I guess time will tell. We actually did a research test screening last year, and the audience skewed a bit older.
Okay.
and we found that females were really responding to the story more than I had anticipated. Because it's an automotive setting, the core of the story is not really about automobiles. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the environment.
Sure.
It's really about this one man's journey through life as a blind boy and then man. And it's at its core, it's inspiring. So I think the female audience was responding to the inspirational value of this and the sense of hope. But I have to say, in some of our screenings in university environments with engineering students, these guys were all young, and they were responding quite favorably and amazed with the same sense that any movie goer was really having. They were inspired. Mm-hmm. And but it's hard to get a young audience to see a movie these days, let alone a documentary, and let alone a movie that starts in 1890.
True. Yes.
So it covers 135 years of history, but I think it'll reach a broad audience. I'm hoping that when people see it, the word of mouth will kind of spread to maybe younger folks. Now, yeah. I had a teacher call me from Hagerstown, and he wanted to show the film to his high school students. And this was 4 or 5 months ago. And I said, okay. Well, certainly.
Yes.
And then he had them fill out their responses, and he was kind of curious to see what it meant to them. And he sent me an email, and I was pretty amazed to see their responses. And again, they were inspired. It in some cases they felt that it would inspire them to do better in life.
Okay, good.
To maybe achieve more. And well, that's pretty gratifying if this film can do that with young folks.
It sure is. But Jack, I want to interject something, and then we have to wrap up. I could really see this film being shown at universities, colleges, universities, because, you know, a lot of times people, especially the Gen Z, they don't know sometimes, you know, if they're going to have a job after they graduate, or this might be very inspirational to kind of know. Maybe as a young engineering student, look at this man, look what happened to him, and there's going to be so many obstacles in life, but this story gives perspective and resilience and hope, and I could really see this at a university.
Well, I couldn't have said it better than you just did, and in fact, we have a sub-distributor that will be getting it to colleges and universities. And so that's part of our distribution model right now is colleges and universities. So I think your perspective about that is spot on. And so we are hoping to get into more colleges and universities.
Good.
And again, time will tell on that.
Yes. I mean, just locally where he lived, perhaps there's a university. Also, in just Googling your late uncle, I could see it's even featured in a Syracuse magazine. I mean, so there's endless possibilities to not just locally where he grew up, but all over.
Syracuse was at Syracuse, Indiana. If it was, we had a screening there last July, a year ago this month.
Wonderful.
And I only thought it was a big theater of 350 people, and I thought maybe if we get 50 people showing up, we'll be lucky. And we ended up turning away 60 people, so we had to have a second screening the next night. But it was overwhelming. It was almost
overwhelming.
The line was wrapped around the block, and it was kind of reminiscent of when I went to see Star Wars in the 70s down in Orange County. It was kind of gratifying to see that.
That's fantastic. Well, we do have to wrap up, but I know this film is available on digital and cable platforms starting July 8th. Anywhere else you'd like to lead listeners to, website, anything?
Oh, yeah. I have the links to all the platforms on my website, www.blindlogicproductions.com.
Okay.
And there's a Watch Now page. And you can link to Apple TV, Amazon, Google Play, Microsoft. They have the links everywhere that you, your preferred platform.
Fantastic. And I'll add it to the show blog, which is getthefunkoutshow.kci.org. I want to thank you so much for joining us, Jack.
Well, bless your heart. Thank you so much. I enjoyed this. And I hope your audience gets something out of it, too. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. Have a wonderful day. Congratulations.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. If you missed any part of my conversation with filmmaker Jack Teeter, the great-nephew of the late Ralph Teeter, who's featured in his award-winning documentary Blind Logic, our conversation will be up within an hour after I wrap, and this is based on the book One Man's Vision, The Life of Automotive Pioneer Ralph R. Teeter. So we're going to take a little break, and then we'll be back. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.
The opinions and views expressed on this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show or other programs on KUCI, please log on to KUCI.org for the latest program schedule.